So our next speaker, Hugo, he's going to talk about creating or replicating the Linux init process using Python. So that's going to be competition for systemd. Enjoy.
Hello, everybody. So yes, I'm going to talk to you about creating a custom Linux init in Python, not with the goal to replace, well, maybe, you will see. So my name is Hugo Herter. I'm a software engineer. I love Python and Linux since 2003, and I joined FOSDEM around that time. So I don't know how many editions I've been to, but maybe 19. I really love FOSDEM and open source. Everything, basically, FOSDEM made me a bit. So I'm going to talk about this concept that I discovered with a friend on embedded devices on a project a few years ago. I found it really cool. And then a few years later, I had a use case that required the same thing for virtual machines in the cloud. And I liked the concept. I wanted to share it with you so you can also build cool stuff with this idea. So I'm not going to sell you a software. I'm just going to show you like how you get there and why you might want to do this. Who here doesn't know what Linux is or doesn't use Linux? Yeah. Okay. So small note about Linux. Something that's really cool in this use case is that it's a monolithic kernel, which means all the drivers can be included, which makes our life much easier when you don't want to manage user processes to manage drivers. You have smaller, like modular kernels that make it more annoying because then you need to actually do more work to have drivers. With Linux, you have most stuff working built in, so that makes our life easier. Typically, when you're booting a computer, a modern PC, you're booting the UEFI, then the UEFI bootloader, then the Linux kernel. Then the Linux kernel boots the init, which is the first process that will launch the machine, and that one is launching all the apps that you have on your machine. So it's the first process started by the Linux kernel during boot. It continues running until the system is shut down. If it does not, Linux is not happy and crashes. Sorry?
Can you make that go away? Sorry.
Oh.
Sorry, I interrupted you. I just wanted to...
Which one?
Oh, no, it's gone. Okay.
So it's a direct or indirect process ancestor of all the other processes. If a process loses and becomes orphaned, it will now belong to init. It started using a hard-coded file name. Well, in fact, Linux tries a few in case the first one doesn't work. And it's typically assigned the process ID identifier number 1, so it's PID1. People use it to call like this. You know probably some common Linux systems, systemd, OpenRC, systemv. There are plenty. Systemd is the one that you have on most machines nowadays, and it does a shitload of stuff that some people are happy with and some people think it's too much. So why would you want to write your own init? The first reason is because you can, probably the most important reason. You can also do it to understand your system better, or in this case, in some cases, performance on a simple system with few tasks. Don't try to compete with systemd if you're running a lot of stuff on a desktop, for example. But if you have only a few tasks, well, in fact, it makes your life simpler. When something goes wrong, there are not so many things going on. So it gives you also full control on your system. You know exactly what's running, when. You can stop everything very easily. You can also do some environment-specific system initialization. Something needs Wi-Fi. Something needs to wait until a certain condition on the system is ready. You can absolutely do this. You could also do that because you don't like systemd, but I showed you a list of alternatives that might be better than writing your own. So typically, this is mostly useful if you have virtual machines or containers or embedded systems where you're not running a lot of stuff inside. Virtual machines, there are secure sandboxes. It's handy because you can launch them without needing root. So you can run stuff in virtual machines on any desktop without needing root access, and you can still run stuff as root inside. So that can be handy for some use cases. One of the use cases where I used this was to make like ephemeral cloud functions, so running untrusted cloud code in the cloud. You have tight control of side effects, so people speak about WebAssembly and how you can really control all the I/O of WebAssembly. You can do the same with VMs. Development sandboxes run stuff as root. And another use case is embedded systems. You want to have full control on what's going on. You don't want to have so many things running, but sometimes you want to have tight interactions, like depending on the voltage of the power supply, you want to run this software or not. You want to log files to disk or not. You also have full control on the disk writes, because what can write on the disk? Well, Linux has all its logs in RAM, so only the processes that only you're in it and the processes it launches can write stuff on disk. So sometimes maybe you don't need to do overlay file system with read-only remount. You could just not write to disk. So I will talk a bit more here about how you can use Linux, Python, and Firecracker to experiment with this idea on a PC. So who here is not familiar with Python or has never used Python? Good. So the good thing with Python here is that its interfaces really well with C and on Linux systems, so you can access all the Linux APIs very easily, and I think you know the rest. So to do this, you will need a Linux file system. It can be any distribution, it doesn't matter too much. The idea is to provide tools that you will want to use during execution, and also to install Python in your file system so you can actually launch Python. You have some instructions on the right on how you can create a minimal 200 megabytes file system based on Debian. And this file system from Debian, in fact, doesn't come with any init, so you need to add your own anyways. Firecracker is an interesting tool. So it was open sourced by Amazon. It's used by the AWS Lambda functions and a few other cloud stuff they do. It's fast, like it's really fast. That's really cool. It runs VMs in a very simple way. It doesn't know about USB, doesn't know about PCI, it doesn't know about all the PC stuff. It just knows about what is relevant inside a VM that allows it to go really fast. It only runs Linux on Linux as well. QMU has also something similar called QMU MicroVM, which is the same thing based on the QMU code base. This is an example of configuration you can use. So just like a JSON configuration you can pass to Firecracker to boot your VM, you specify, okay, this is my Linux kernel, this is my root file system, some boot arguments, and that's about it. That's about all you need. And if you just do this, you just launch Firecracker with your configuration file, define where the API socket is. Well, you didn't put any in it, so you can see here that Linux is really gentle and tries, okay, can I run /sbin/init? No, it's not, I didn't find it. Okay, I'll try another path, and at the end it falls back on a shell, so that's really kind of Linux to do this. It's also quite cool if you want to experiment or debug stuff, you just get directly a shell. But that's not our goal. Our goal is to use Python. And in fact, with the shebang argument, I think it's lacking an instruction there. But with the shebang, you can just basically have one file and say, well, in fact, this is an executable file, and it has to be executed with Python 3.11. And you just put it in /sbin/init, and it will just launch it, run it, and print hello, as you can see here. Yeah, so the only thing is that now it printed hello, and then it left, and then Linux is unhappy because the init stopped, and you have a whole cold trace of, I'm not happy, something crashed, this is bad. So you don't really care, because maybe everything you wanted to do is done already, but it could be handled a bit nicer. So if you want to properly handle this, you may want to shut down the system. So you could try to do like os.system shutdown or halt, but well, these are in fact tools that call the init system, so they're not present, so you need to tell the Linux kernel to shut down manually. because you don't have any shutdown, halt, reboot. These are all provided by systemd or runv or other init systems. So you need to get a little bit into magic and do system calls with magic numbers. So this is the cheat sheet. These are the four numbers you need in order to reboot a Linux system. So the first one is system reboot. Then you have two magic numbers to make sure that you are really doing what you want. And this one includes the sentence like "fee dead." And the last one is the actual action you want to do, if it's halt or reboot. There are different magic codes there. And if you do this, you can get actually a clean shutdown. So here we can see the machine was printed hello, and then we have a clean shutdown. We can see the same thing here. This is about the same code, except it says hello fosdem. And we can just launch it and see how much time it takes. Okay, that took about 100 milliseconds. That was quite nice. Starting the VM, starting the Linux kernel, printing hello, and shutting it down. So when I said Firecracker is fast, I mean it's almost instant. And that makes it really, really handy. I find it really cool compared to launching standard VMs. The next thing you might want to do is child process management to actually be an init that launches other processes. Depending on which school you're from, you may want to do it sync or async. That's up to you to choose. And this is how you can do this. You may also want to do things like handling system tasks, launching reboots. So there are two also approaches like in the init environment. Some init says basically when you launch shutdown, you just launch a script that will launch shutdown to tell Linux to shut down and kill the processes. Or you have a Unix socket that talks to the init, and the init is doing the proper shutdown itself. That's what like systemd and the more advanced init systems are doing. They don't just let other stuff kill everything. You may also want to mount file systems. You can do this by running commands, or you can use the libc, the same way you use the syscalls. You can call the mount command directly from the libc from Python. You don't need to install anything to do this. No pip required in anything I'm presenting here. So you will all probably want to set up network interfaces and then loading kernel modules, updating the system clock if you're on an embedded device. These are all kind of stuff that you may want to do, and some examples on how to do them there. So when you are in a VM, you may want to interface with the host system, and there are only a few ways to do this with micro VMs. The first one is called virtio vsox. So it's socket transport between the VM host and the guest through the virtualization stack provided by Firecracker or QEMU. And this provides you a unique socket on the host and a special socket type inside the guest that has a number, so it has a specific, it's not AF Unix or TCP, it's AF VSOC in this case. And this is really also a very performant way of communication, and you can have bidirectional listeners and clients and servers on sockets. You can use network interfaces, set up IP addresses, and the whole network stack. You can have serial console emulation. That's how we have the logs, and you can type back. Block devices, so you can interact with partitions, but that's not ideal for high throughputs, read and writes, but you could, like, Cloud Init is basically providing configuration by providing an extra block device that looks like a CD-ROM with all the configuration of the VM in it. That's what's happening on most cloud platforms. And it's because it's a micro VM, you then have USB, PCI, things that are actually useful. When you want to share directories between a host and a VM, often it's using something like called virtio. There are ways to share that, and it's emulating PCI, which doesn't work in micro VMs. So when you want to do this, it looks a little bit like this. On the server, you're just manipulating Unix sockets from Python, but inside the guest, you're manipulating vsock sockets, and you have a bit of magic numbers, like you need to give a number to your sockets. I choose 52 because that was in the documentation of Firecracker, but you could use any number there. And you have this a bit weird trick to know to which sockets from when you are on the host to it connect. You need to first send connect and then the name of the number of the sockets to actually connect to it. So this is how you can create bidirectional connection without any network stack between the host and a VM. You may also want to pipe sockets, which is a really, really nice Swiss knife tool to convert Unix socket to VSOCs to TCP. So you can have, if you have an HTTP server running inside the VM with socket, you can very easily have it exposed as HTTP on TCP for your web browser on the host, stuff like this. If you want to experiment and debug, that's really cool with Python because it's interpreted, so you can execute new code on demand. You can have an interactive shell. You can have a debugger in the console, remote Python shell. You can use, or you can spin SSH and use common debugging tools. But that, what is nice with the Python shell, you can actually have a shell inside the namespace of your init to debug it. For example, if I look here, let's say I have my init does this, so I'll put it in light mode. So here I'm launching Nginx as a subprocess, and then I'm launching, this is also in the standard library of Python, it's really cool, an interactive console, and then it's just to do a clean shutdown once this break exits. And this allows me to very simply say, let's update this small shortcut. So I update and I have a Python shell and I have my Nginx object that I can do, for example, and I'm just inside my init, inside my VM, from my shell here, so that makes it really handy to debug, experiment with stuff. I don't need to recompile, rebuild a VM, the root file system. So Python is really cool for that. If you want, I also put you a simplified remote shell on the right that you can also use from the VSOC or from TCP/IP. So some advantages and limitations you have when you actually do this with Python. So Python starts, in fact, pretty fast compared to other services and even compared to the Linux kernel. Most of the time in these 100 milliseconds, most of it was taken by Linux, not by CPython. It's easy to read, write, and concise code. You have the readeval print loop. You have the Python shell. You have a lot of libraries included. You don't need especially third-party requirements. You can always add stuff with pip, but you don't really need it. The source code can be extracted, so that can allow further debugging and maintenance, and you have one of the richest ecosystems of third-party modules. In limitations, while it's not the fastest, you have larger memory usage than if you do it in a compiled language. Typing is not mandatory. Some people like mandatory typing. Or borrow checkers. If you're processing large logs, it's not ideal. Like, usually don't process lots of data in Python, pure Python code, but I think most people know about this. The source code can be extracted. Some people don't like this. I think it's great because I love open source, so it's always nice. I like also to ship JavaScript that never minified. And complex code can be dangerous in the init if it crashes. You don't have, if it crashes, it's better to do, you know, this ugly thing that try, accept anything. Might be useful sometimes. So in conclusion, it's not that hard to do this. It's great to better understand the operating system. It's easy to port it to your favorite language if you don't want to use Python. It's a good use for Linux and open source. And you can find the slides on this link or by scanning the QR code. I want to thank my friend Hashtag for the ID and LFIM for paying me to develop it with the init system in VMs and help me and fund me to experiment with this.
Thank you very much. So we have a bit of time for questions. Any questions? No questions. One.
When you have PID1, one of the tasks of PID1 is to remove dead processes. So when you have a process that dies, sometimes it stays in the process list, and PID1 should take care of like dead processes and clean that stuff. Did you do that?
Yeah, so you can in fact register a callback to a specific using a specific syscall to say, well, a specific Linux kernel signal to say I want to handle zombie processes, and then you have an implementation with async IO or non-async IO as usual to just handle this, and you have like a callback, your function can handle the process and decide what to do.
More questions?
There's one.
You showed the magic numbers, right? But I didn't understand where you have to send these magic numbers to.
So you send these magic numbers to the Linux kernel. You do a syscall, so a call to the Linux kernel to say, hey, I want to run this instruction, this operation, to the Linux kernel, and then it checks that these numbers are actually the right ones, and that you're not doing a mistake, and in fact you called function as 169, that's for reboot, but you wanted to call another one, for example.
Okay, so it's a syscall, all right, then I understand. Thanks.
Okay. Wow, I have to. I'll come up there. No, just a second.
So if you let this run for a while, how stable is Python? Do you see any crashes or memory leaks or stuff like that?
I didn't see in the use I have, I didn't see any issue that was not because of like memory leaks from my code, because I had lists popping up, keeping updating or something. But in fact, I had no issue with this. I didn't have I didn't face any issue any stability issue with this. You could also argue that if you have a stability issue, it takes 100 milliseconds to get back up, but that's not on embedded devices. That's on VMs, on peripheral PCs. When you're on an embedded device, then the Linux kernel will take longer to boot, and you don't want to do that as often.
So thank you for presenting this interesting use case. I once heard, I don't know if it's entirely true, that Python was also developed to maybe from the functionality replace Barebox or something like that. And what, from your experimenting, can you say how complete is this approach? Could you do everything that you need, or what are the functional limitations?
But I think you have a lot of stuff. I was surprised by how much stuff you can do just from the standard library of Python with this, in these use cases. And then you can always call third-party processes, just launch sub-processes to launch other programs. So it's really not limiting. I think the main limitations you have is more like performance. Like systemd processes all the logs into a binary format, and there's a lot of stuff, and you start to want to do all of that, then performance will matter more. Even if maybe most of it is still delegated to other processes, it wouldn't matter too much with Python, but that's still a bit of an issue, as long as we have the GIL and we are an interpreted language.
Okay, there's one question on the chat. How did you get Python in your minimal root file system?
So I just debootstrap it. It's a bit small to read, but basically when you launch debootstrap with a minimal version, you can say also include this package, and you need to just include the version of Python you want. Don't include just Python 3 because that's a meta package and it doesn't really work in that use case. But if you specify the version of Python, you can also add Nginx and all the software you want. This is specific to Debian. You just say, when you use dbootstrap to create the root file system, this is the list of all the packages I want to have in my file system.
Hi, thank you. This is a very small question. In a system like Debian, what's that init written on, like a C, C++?
Systemd is written, I guess, in C. It could be C++, but I would suspect more C.
And I have a final question, but a short one. Have you ever tried using MicroPython instead of Python 3.11 minimal?
I have not. I think it should work, but you know, the standard library is more limited, so that would be more difficult.
It is, but it's also faster and smaller, and it's for like
I don't
tiny
know if it's,
VM.
I don't know if it's faster. Well. I mean, it's smaller.
It starts up really.
It starts
quickly.
Up faster,
yes.
But the performance after the first 25 milliseconds might not be better.
That may be true. I haven't tried that, but the startup time is amazing. So,
yeah.
To regular Python anyway.
But then, if you already have 80 milliseconds from the Linux kernel, you need to see also.
Yeah.
Maybe then you want to boot a unikernel where you build everything built in. So the unikernel is basically you just boot one binary that does everything, contains everything, the kernel and the application.
Okay, thank you.